Thanks for coming back each month to listen to Makeshift Stories. You can help us out by writing a review on your favorite podcast service, such as Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio. Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable. Wikipedia defines a monster as any creature that is often hideous and may produce fear or physical harm by its appearance or actions. The word usually implies something unnatural or evil. Wikipedia goes on to say that monsters are generally morally objectionable, physically or psychologically hideous, or a freak of nature. But is a monster necessarily bad? Does it even see itself as an abomination of nature? May it even think that it is doing good? In this month's story, after being shut down for years, Mybel, through an act of nature, is reactivated. The bot finds itself in a new and foreign body. With large gaps in its damaged memory, Mybel can remember little other than his name and a strong desire to help. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 124, Mybel. Somewhere in some time, the monster, despite its violent actions, might just be a little misled.
Turn the TV down.
Kozumi screamed from the top of the stairs, red-eyed and upset.
It's too loud. I can't sleep.
Kozumi, you should have been asleep hours ago. You've got school tomorrow.
Nike, his mother, admonished, muting the TV and reluctantly getting up. It had been another hard day. Up hours before Kozumi to make lunch and get ready for work, then home after six to start the evening routine. Raising a child on her own with only an ancient automated domestic was not easy.
I'm coming,
she said, trying to feign enthusiasm. Kozumi scooted back to bed before his mother had made it to the first step.
Tell me a story,
he demanded. Nike tucked her son in, then slumped back down onto the corner of the bed.
But then you need to go to sleep.
I will, I promise.
Kozumi agreed.
Have I ever told you about Mybel?
Kozumi shook his head.
Good.
And Nike started.
This happened a long time ago. It was an unusual night at the West Hills landfill. That's where our garbage goes, Kozumi. It's perched on a grassy bluff above the river valley northwest of town. It had been an unusually hot and humid day. As the sun set, dark clouds, so heavy with water vapor that they could barely keep from scraping the ground, rolled in. When the strain became too much, rain poured out of the center of the gathering storm over a long disused section of the landfill. Torrents of water quickly eroded the carelessly applied topsoil intended to entomb the unwanted garbage forever. But in a few minutes, the grasslands revealed their metal, plastic, and rotting cardboard bones. An unseen electrical charge reached up, leaching into the sky, seeking its opposite. For an instant, light brighter and hotter than the sun arced from a cloud to the ground. Discarded batteries charged to full capacity, temporary pathways formed. Disconnected parts assumed new purpose and arose. The result couldn't be described as an eruption. It was more like a slow-motion video of something falling apart, run in reverse. At first, a dome of earth, plastic, and rusting metal pushed skyward, then fractured and split apart. Toasters, broken flat screens, food processors, and other unwanted and obsolete things dropped away from the new conglomeration, revealing a never-before-seen machine. Glowing nickel-cadmium arteries threaded through the new structure, linking and powering everything. It rose 30 meters toward the clouds before another thread of lightning found it and fused the discarded components together so they became one. The great machine reached into its mind for a name.
Mybo. I am Mybo.
It roared the name into the storm like a clap of thunder, which echoed through the empty landfill.
What is my purpose?
It wondered. A nearby prairie dog, woken by the noise, poked its head out of a burrow and watched as the machine discovered more concepts and words.
I am friend. I help and protect.
Mybo announced, then noticed the tiny prairie dog.
You are a friend. I will protect.
Alarmed by the commotion at the disused end of the landfill, the night security guard drove a patrol truck up the winding, rutted road to find out what had happened. Mybo saw the truck rapidly approaching. So did the prairie dog, which, mesmerized by the headlights, froze in place. The small creature had unfortunately placed the exit to its burrow in the middle of a tire track. Mybo quickly calculated the path of the truck.
Run!
He thundered, but the prairie dog couldn't.
Run!
Mybo encouraged again, this time louder. The small creature just stared at the approaching lights. Mybo was friend. He was the protector of friends. He suddenly understood. This was his purpose. The security guard barely had time to bail out when she noticed the giant metal foot start to stomp down. The prairie dog finally decided to run for another hole, and the guard ran for her life as the truck was crushed. Mybo noted both. The four-wheeled machine, he realized, they were afraid of it. Mybo had saved both from the metal menace. The great machine looked up and saw the twinkling lights of the distant city, where tiny glowing eyes flitted along unseen pathways. There were thousands of them, thousands of the aggressive four-wheeled machines. Stiffly at first, Mybo began to move one foot in front of another. His new legs, made from discarded backhoe parts, were foreign to him. He seemed to remember having wheels, like the predatory beast he had just crushed. Mybo almost toppled several times as he learned how to walk. Perched on a hill near the perimeter fence, another prairie dog had been watching the scene unfold since the eruption of the giant from the top of one of the rubbish heaps. Initially attracted to the spot by the lightning strike and a loud noise it thought indicated a landslide, the curious creature had been hoping to find an old tunnel that might have been reopened. But after witnessing the giant's act of heroism saving a resident of an adjacent colony and one of the ever-present human parasites, it lost interest in burrows. This prairie dog had witnessed many brethren fall to the fate of being flattened by rampaging four-wheeled beasts and saw an opportunity to even the score just a bit. So it took a chance and climbed up one of the new giant's legs and perched on the shoulder of the wobbly hero.
Hello there,
the prairie dog whistled as loud as it could. Mybo stopped, experimenting with his new appendages, and looked around. But before the great machine turned toward the sound, the prairie dog had hopped onto its head.
Where are you? I don't see you. Show yourself,
Mybo demanded.
Hello,
the prairie dog whistled again. Mybo twisted around, almost falling over.
You'll need to get more stable on your legs, my newborn pal. I'm on your head,
it taunted. Mybo tried to swat the pest away with a bucket-like hand. The prairie dog easily darted out of the way, like a fly, then settled on an aluminum panel from an old tanker which formed part of Mybo's shoulder.
What are you?
Mybo asked. He couldn't immediately find an image of the thing in his damaged memory files.
Your friend,
the rodent claimed.
I watched you stop the four-wheeled thing. You saved my cousin. I believe we can help each other.
A friend?
Mybo repeated.
I had a friend once, I think. A good friend. Hard to remember. Too many data blocks missing. Where is my friend? I don't know where. I must help.
Sensing the need in the great machine, the prairie dog announced,
I am Beltran. It's an old name, meaning bright raven. Everyone needs a friend, and in this world, I am yours.
Mybo paused while lower functions in other electronic brains repurposed from vacuum cleaners and household security systems discovered and calibrated servo motors. At the same time, he searched for associations with the word friend, but found only other nebulous concepts. bond, affection, companion, confidant, familiar, a list of contacts associated with a social media platform. Maibo realized he didn't have such a list, but did have a deep-rooted bond. But bond to who? Or to what? He'd need to find out. And there was the tiny creature. A subsystem from an outdated encyclopedia had finally identified as genus Cinnamus of the Skyriade family, a rodent that lived on or in the ground. And it was offering friendship. Maibo decided to accept for now. Maybe enough neural net pathways would eventually reroute so he could remember more.
I accept, friend Beltran. Hello, I am Maibo. I am your friend.
Well, Maibo, see those lights in the distance?
Beltran asked.
That's our destination, the heart of the problem.
Problem?
The machine considered for a moment.
I don't see a problem. What problem?
The four-wheeled ones, remember?
Annoyed, the prairie dog bristled its fur.
The thing that tried to squash my cousin. You crushed it, right? And you are Maibo, the great protector of friends. Am I right?
Maibo let a few bits of the wheeled thing fall to the ground. He had forgotten he was holding them and listened.
There are thousands more over near the lights,
Beltran whistled excitedly.
No doubt running down other friends as we talk. There's no time to lose. That's why you were created, to stop them, to protect friends. We must go now,
the prairie dog commanded. In fact, Beltran had no idea why the great kludge of parts had been arc welded together by a bolt of lightning. A fluke of nature, the small creature guessed. But why look a gift horse in the mouth? It was finally time for payback.
My directive is to be a friend, help, and protect,
Maibo admitted thoughtfully. The smaller brains reported back that they had found and tuned all his new body parts.
Okay, Beltran, let's help our friends,
he agreed. As he plodded toward the distant lights, Maibo didn't look so much like a robot as a collection of mismatched parts in a highly unlikely configuration, reluctantly cooperating to act like a single machine. No one on the four-lane highway seemed to notice him approach until his metallic feet blocked the road. Brakes screamed, cars slewed, a few trucks jackknifed trying to avoid colliding with the giant that had suddenly appeared from nowhere. Maibo stood and watched, then demanded,
Wheeled machines, let your prey go. Captive creatures, flee while I rid you of these monstrous predators.
Maibo's voice shattered windows and shook the earth. Beltran plugged his ears. But nothing happened. None of the four wheels let go of their captives. Then a half-ton at the front of the traffic jam began to impatiently honk its horn, causing a chain reaction. The great machine was confused, but refused to give ground. Beltran, who had been watching from the top of Maibo's head, scrambled down to perch on an old loudspeaker that served as one of the machine's ears, and whispered,
Don't just stand there, friend. Do something. Show them who you are.
But the four wheels have not given up their captives,
Maibo pointed out.
And I demanded they do so in a deep booming voice, as you recommended on the way over.
The prairie dog scratched its midriff with a hind leg as it considered the situation. Then Beltran had an idea.
They need to see what you can do. They need a demonstration. There, the long thin one. I can see there is no one inside. Crush it.
Maibo reached down with a pincher-like hand made from earth-moving buckets, grabbed a semi-trailer and hoisted it into the air. The honking immediately stopped.
Not too high. Keep it in the light,
Beltran directed.
They need to see this.
Maibo lowered the trailer so it was suspended just above the streetlights.
Good. Now crush it. Crush it hard,
the prairie dog directed, relishing the effect it would have. Maibo grabbed the trailer in both hands and twisted as hard as he could, imagining the four-wheeled thing flaking apart like someone twisting a croissant. Where had that image come from? He wondered. Why had he even thought of it? Bits and pieces rained down on the road at his feet. The result was immediate and exactly what friend Beltran had predicted. The four-wheeled machines expelled their captives as fast as they could.
Run!
Maibo encouraged the escaping creatures in his amplified voice.
Now, use your feet.
Beltran insisted with glee, while excitedly stomping his tiny hind legs on Mybo's shoulder to demonstrate.
Those evil things will continue to hunt my kind down until they are taught a lesson.
Beltran whistled as loud as he could, but was soon drowned out by the noise of plastic snapping, glass breaking, and metal crunching and straining. It was fun, Mybo decided, like tromping across crusty snow. Had he done that before? Did that matter? After all, he was helping his small friends, helping rid the world of their ugly mechanical four-wheeled predators, and nothing could stop him. Mybo stomped and stomped until none of the four-wheelers would ever move again. He didn't stop until the road ahead was empty.
What next, Beltran?
He asked when he realized there was nothing left to crush. Beltran hopped across to Mybo's other shoulder.
Let me think,
Beltran chirped. Sat for several moments thinking, then came to the following conclusion.
I think we've won, but let's wait here for a while just in case there are a few other predators lurking around.
Mybo stood and waited, and waited. It took until the faint orange of an impending sunrise painted a thin line along the eastern sky before something happened. Another wheeled predator roared along the side of the road and stopped a distance away. It disgorged smaller creatures who busied themselves moving in and out of it, setting things up. Mybo watched and began to suspect that the two-legged ones were not afraid of the predator, nor had they been its captive, but were instead working with it. How could that be? He wondered. Why then had all the other creatures run for their lives? Three small suns mounted to the end of metal rods suddenly came to life, casting long shadows in the promise of the pre-dawn. Beltran covered its eyes with a foreleg. Mybo's eyes irised down and filters dropped in place to cut the glare. One creature huddled behind a machine on three thin legs, while another stood between Mybo and it, talking. Mybo strained to hear what was being said, but the noise of approaching sirens began to drown the speaker out. Flashing red and blue lights turned the scene into a weird impromptu discotheque, which momentarily dazed Beltran and Mybo. Dark-suited figures erupted from the new four-wheelers. Again, Mybo had the distinct feeling that the predators and the creatures spilling from them might be somehow working together. He wasn't sure of what he should do next. The prairie dog friend thing certainly wasn't helping. It was currently hiding behind his head. So Mybo bellowed as loud as he could.
I am Mybo, protector of small friends. I have won the day over the four-wheelers. Scatter now and tell your fellow mechanical villains that Mybo is here. That Mybo will protect his small friends. That they can no longer eat and hunt their victims with impunity because Mybo will find each one of you and crush you.
The sound of his voice echoed into the pre-dawn, but nothing happened. Neither the new four-wheelers or their dark-suited two-leg companions moved, although some of the small creatures had put their hands over their ears. Mybo stomped his great feet on the ground, causing a minor earth tremor which knocked over the small suns and made the machine on three legs begin to tip. The creature who had been tending to it grabbed and steadied the thing. Other than that, no one moved. Mybo remembered the demonstration Beltran had suggested the first time and reached down to grasp a large red four-wheeler with flashing lights. His pincers were closing around it when suddenly one of the attendant creatures bravely ran forward, dragging a cable with a clamp on its end, which it snapped onto Mybo's right foot. It jumped back, then the connection point sparked. Mybo felt fire run through his body and jerked back, falling hard on the pavement, his bulky frame grinding huge divots into the unnaturally smooth surface of the highway. The attendant creatures cheered and danced. Mybo lay stunned, immobilized and confused. Faye watched in fascination and horror on the family's flat screen. Police and fire trucks self-assembled into a makeshift barricade in front of a field littered with dozens of crushed cars and trucks.
Officials have no idea where the metal monster came from or who is controlling it,
the newswoman said in professional but concerned tones.
No one has been hurt to date, but police are stressing how dangerous the situation is and urge citizens to stay away from the area. We are now switching live to location. Mark?
Thank you, Joanne. Marky Narson here on location, where what could only be described as a giant mechanical Frankenstein's monster has closed Highway 2 just west of town. It hasn't moved for a while, and police are getting ready to approach it. Wait, I think the monster is about to say something.
I am Maibo, protector of small friends.
The voice was so loud that the reporter was forced to cover his ears. It had called itself Maibo. Maibo? Faye mouthed in surprise. Maibo was the name she had given her therapeutic robot aid, which had suddenly shown up when she had turned 6. Faye was slow to talk and slow to make friends, and her parents, both extremely social, had been worried. After endless evaluations and tests, Maibo appeared in her life, described to her as a friend who would help her adapt to the world. A friend to make her comfortable and functional in a world that apparently didn't have the patience or time for kids like Faye, who needed extra help and a relaxed pace to learn. The robot came with no name when it arrived on her 6th birthday. She remembered when it had first spoke, looking at her through dark glass eyes and an expressionless mechanical face.
"What would you like to call me?"
it had asked. She didn't immediately answer. Her mind, as usual when she was put on the spot, became blank. Her imagination failing, Faye fell back to logic. My and robot was all that she could think, and the only word she could make up with them was my bot. She dropped the T because she didn't like the letter T, and finally announced, "Maibo, you are Maibo."
"Maibo is your friend,"
the mechanical assistant said, and for the next 4 years, she and Maibo learned about the world together. The robot was infinitely patient, not caring if Faye became overwhelmed and shut down. Instead, it carefully peeled away the sources of her overload, teaching her how to recognize and deal with each. Faye in turn became more confident, did better at school, and even found it easier to play with other kids. Then one day, Maibo was gone, replaced, her parents claimed, by a newer and more advanced model who could help her improve her schoolwork. She had never questioned her parents' explanation that Maibo had moved on to help another young child, but she had never gotten over the sense of loss, and had even been angered by Maibo's apparent abandonment of her. There was something in the voice and the phrasing of the monstrous machine's words, emanating from the TV, that convinced Faye. But how had Maibo, who had only been a bit over a meter high with soft white plastic skin, turned into that thing on the news, she wondered. The machine began to stomp its feet, making the video image shake. Menacingly, it bent forward and reached out to grab one of the fire engines. A quick-thinking power utility employee raced forwards, dragging a cable, which he clamped to one of the monster's feet, then ran away. Sparks arched out, and miniature lightning bolts exploded onto the video screen, washing the image out. Then cheers from the gathering crowd as the monster fell backward to the ground. It lay there for a moment stunned, then suddenly struggled to its feet, turned, and hobbled away, the leg that had been electrocuted no longer bending at the knee.
"It looks like it's heading for the city landfill,"
the reporter announced excitedly.
"The police have it on the run."
Confused, Maibo stumbled back through the fields of grain and corn to the dump. Home. He wanted to go home. He hadn't known what home was until the pain. The shock had fried some of his outboard components, which took the brunt of the power surge. By the time it hit Maibo's central brain, there was just enough current left to excite long-dead circuits in his neuronet. New connections were made. Fragments of old, frightening memories emerged from previously inaccessible places. He was being dumped and covered. Fear, last power draining, then nothing. A blank until last night. He was not invincible, and the dump was not his home. He knew that now, but he had nowhere else to go. Beltran, who had jumped to safety, was now back on his shoulder, nattering in his ear.
"We'll go back, fix your leg, and then return to defeat them. Keep them from crushing our friends. Remember, you are Maibo. You are indestructible. You were created by the elements to protect us. That is your destiny, Maibo. Your destiny. The sparking cable thing was a small setback. That's all."
"I am not,"
Maibo whimpered.
"I am not this,"
he gestured to his kludged together body.
"I don't know what I am or why I am here."
"You're Maibo, protector of small friends,"
Beltran reassured, but uncertainty was starting to creep into the rodent's voice.
We can fix what they did to you. You're born of the same stuff as the Sparks. I saw that, Maibo.
What?
That brilliant light. It made you. It can't destroy you. You came from it.
Beltran explained. But Maibo wasn't so sure. He turned to look behind. A caravan of four wheels, festooned with flashing lights, confined to narrow bands of asphalt, were attempting to follow him. But he would beat them to the hill where he had come alive, or, a new thought, where he had reawakened. He ignored Beltran's constant, near-desperate chatter and picked up his pace. His frozen right leg gouged out large divots on the ground as he heaved it forward with each step. The sun had risen by the time Maibo dropped himself down into the crater he had emerged from. He looked out at the morning sun, wondering why he knew what a sunrise was and why it made him feel so alone. Faye lay in the long grass on a small hill overlooking the landfill. She had managed to sneak away without her parents noticing, then bike straight to the dump. The police, fire department, and EMS had barricaded access to the landfill with yellow tape, which fluttered in the morning breeze. She thought it looked pretty and useless at the same time, until she noticed the patrols, which had already worn a path in the grass inside the perimeter. But none of them had dared to enter. Instead, they had taken over the administration building where commercial trucks weighed in before dumping. From its roof, now their makeshift command post, four uniformed figures trained binoculars on the largest hill in the oldest part of the landfill. It looked like an eruption of ancient garbage had taken place at its peak. The top had been sheared off and junk lay scattered down the grassy slope, and in the middle of the crater the giant machine sat, vacantly staring out over the land. Faye knew she wasn't going to be able to get through the police tape without being caught, but suddenly remembered a path through the coulees on the riverside of the dump that all the kids in her neighborhood knew about. She had even been on it once or twice when she was 9, when Maibo was still at home. She backed down the hill on her stomach through the tall grass and weeds so no one could see her, then ran to the edge of the prairie where it had been carved out to form the river valley by a massive flood at the end of some ice age she couldn't remember the name of. Faye slid down the steep slope on her bum until she found an overgrown trail, then followed it around the escarpment until it suddenly veered up to a chain-link fence. She scrambled up the slope until the trail ended at a small depression worn under the chain-link, where the neighborhood kids squeezed through. It was significantly smaller than she remembered and almost got stuck several times, ending up ripping the back of her t-shirt and pants where they had snagged on the rough ends of the wire loops. Finally through, she carefully looked around. The police obviously didn't know about the back way into the dump. No one was around, not even down on the valley bottom below. Faye carefully made her way along the backside of the landfill until she came to the cratered hill, got down on all fours, then shimmied up. When she was almost at the top, she dropped down on her stomach and inched forward until she could just see over the lip of the crater. The kludged together monster sat with his back to her, facing the standoff at the gate. It hadn't moved. Oddly, she noticed there was a gopher sitting on the great machine's shoulder whistling into its ear. She took a chance, raised her head, and cupped her hands around her mouth.
Maibo,
she whispered. The gopher stirred, but the machine did not. Louder.
Maibo, it's Faye, your friend. Is that you in there, Maibo? Do you remember me? I didn't know where you had gone. They told me you had been reassigned to someone else, someone younger, who needed you more than me. But I never really believed that. I missed you. Is that you in there? Come out. Come home with me.
This time the machine stirred and began to slowly turn its head from side to side. Faye tried again.
Are you Maibo? I gave you that name. My parents brought you home to help me. Do you remember? It was my 6th birthday. You and me became friends.
The gopher, who was chattering more urgently now, was suddenly swept away by one of the machine's arms. It flew through the air and landed safely nearby on the grass. Quickly recovering, it spotted Faye, bared its teeth at her, then began nattering. It made several fake charges, each time quickly retreating when she looked at it. A loud noise near the gate on the other side of the compound diffused the confrontation. The gopher bounded away to a high spot and stood on its hind legs to see what was happening. Faye stood up. The gate to the landfill had been breached by a large truck pulling a chugging power generator and an oversized spool of electrical cable. Maibo seemed resigned to the inevitable. The gopher became frantic and ran over to the giant machine, climbing up and chattering at it, trying to get Maibo to stand up. But the machine did not respond. It seemed transfixed by the unfolding events.
"Maibo," Faye pleaded, "I know who you are. I know they didn't reassign you. They dumped you here instead, didn't they? But that's in the past now. I'm so happy I found you. Please come home with me."
Still, Maibo did nothing. A power utility employee, surrounded by heavily armored police, nervously pulled a heavy cable up the hill, which reluctantly unspooled from the generator truck. Other police backed them up from behind their four-wheelers, guns pointed at Maibo. Realizing what was about to happen, Faye stood up and yelled,
"Maibo, get up and run!"
Distraught, the gopher bounded towards the utility worker, chattering. When that didn't work, the small creature ran to the cable and started gnawing on it. Faye saw the worker clamp the cable onto Maibo's leg. But before the power could be turned on, a panel on the great machine's back fell away, and a small plastic figure, yellowed by the years, shot out and rolled down the backside of the hill. Faye raced after it. Then the sky lit up with sparks and arcing electricity.
"That's it. That's the story,"
Nike quietly whispered to her son, who had almost fallen asleep. Ozumi rolled over.
"What happened to Maibo?"
"He's downstairs, as always, washing the dishes to help us out," Nike assured. "Now it's time for you to go to sleep."
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 124, Maibo. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us or write a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio or check us out on Facebook. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. And thanks to those from all over the planet who have already emailed us. We release a new story every month between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's episode was written by Ellen V. Herr and read by Mitchell Tu. The opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David H. And don't forget to listen to Series, which is posted around the beginning of the month. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.